This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a brand new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchen, and today we have a very special guest, Jordan Reed from Cover One. If you don't follow Jordan on Twitter, go to @JReedNFL. He's one of the best draft guys around. He also has a fantastic draft guide that he gave me a little preview of that I've been checking out over the last couple of days. Jordan, thank you so much for coming on, man.
Thank you guys for having me on. Excited to be here.
So, Jordan, how many profiles did you do in your draft guide? I want to let the people know how much work you've been putting in, because that thing is impressive.
So I think it ended up being 234, and I wanted to keep it around 175. So that just gives you the idea of how far I exceeded my number. But that's a good thing, because more content, the better. But the thing about my guide is that I'm not going to put any guys in there that I didn't get to. And I know there's some guys missing, but I'm only going to include guys that I can give a fair evaluation on, because I don't want to give the false illusion of anything out there about these guys, because these rankings are forever.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a couple of years from now, a lot of people judge the rankings, I think, too quickly on some of these things, and also judge them too harshly, because, you know, so many kind of factors that we can't factor in at this point of a lot of these evaluations, you know, what team they go to, their scheme fit, what, you know, the coaching staff, what goes on in their lives personally off the field, all contribute to reasons, you know, that maybe they don't work out, and guys that we are saying are, you know, these great top 50 prospects that don't pan out. But we're going to talk tonight with Jordan about the defensive backs, safeties, and a couple of corners as well. But obviously the safeties, I think Adam and I both agree that, you know, the Patriots could be in the hunt for a safety pretty early on in this draft. I don't think that it would be too shocking to see them even pull the trigger on a safety at 32. But I want to start with the corner, because this guy has picked up, and I know that a lot of these rumors this time of year kind of get overblown, but this guy's picked up a lot of steam for the Patriots over the last couple of weeks with a couple of different good source reports about their interest in Jojuwan Williams out of Vanderbilt, who Bill Belichick had a pre-draft press conference about a week ago where he said that, you know, there's a lot of big receivers coming into the league, whether they're tight ends, wide receivers, guys that have size that play in the slot, as well as something that Belichick pointed out. And at some point in time, you got to draft guys or acquire guys that can cover those bigger guys. And Jojuwan Jordan is certainly one of those guys.
Yeah, he is. And if you look at him, that's the first thing that stands out about him, and that's his size. And he has a really interesting story. He was one of the best high school prospects to ever come out of the state of Tennessee. And shockingly, he went to Vanderbilt. And a lot of people were thinking that he probably would go to the Volunteers, but that just didn't prove to be the case. A guy that had to sit out the senior year of his high school career, because there was a eligibility concern about him when he transferred from private to public school. So he didn't get to play his senior year. And a lot of people were thinking that a lot of schools really weren't going to stick with him because of that. But he stayed by the Vanderbilt side, and he ended up going there. And I thought he had a successful career there. And like I said, the first thing that stands out about him is his height. I mean, he's all of 6'4", 210 pounds. So a lot of people are thinking if things don't work out for him at corner, maybe he could transition to a safety-like role. But he held up really well at Vanderbilt, and that came to a surprise to a lot of people, because you don't really see 6'4 corners very rarely coming into the NFL and being successful. So with that being said, I think he's a bit different. Now, there is some questions about his long speed, but we've seen the Patriots have success with guys of that stature in the past. They're not necessarily the most biggest or fastest guys in the world, but Bill Belichick has been able to protect him with his scheme. So, and I know a great example of that, some of the guys that they have brought in the past. And I know Stephon Gilmore isn't a taller guy, but he wasn't known for being this blazer speed. And I know he ran really fast at the combine, but when he was at South Carolina, there was some questions about his long speed, and even coming into Buffalo, there was some questions about that. So I think they're kind of two different types of corners, but as far as playing style, they have that aggressive alpha mentality, like, and physicality at the line that you see very similarly in a Bill Belichick type of cornerback. So it makes sense why Jawan Williams is a target of the Patriots.
Yeah. I had a quick question. When you watched his Georgia film, obviously, he got beat a couple times deep there by, I think it was Mecole Hardman. And and it seems like he's one of these guys that if he does get his hands on you at the line of scrimmage for a jam, you're done. But like you said, that long speed can be a concern. Do you feel like he's going to be necessarily sort of pigeonholed into a guy that only covers the bigger receivers? Or do you feel like he is somebody that has more scheme versatility than, you know, you would think to start off with?
That's a really good question. I'm glad you asked that. And I think he's a guy that's probably going to have to be protected with the scheme a little bit, because he can't consistently hold up in man coverage just because he doesn't have the athleticism in order to do that. So I think he's probably going to have to be a boundary corner just because there's less space in that area. And you've seen it for yourself on the film when he's able to get his hands on at the line of scrimmage. It's very hard to get around him just because he's 6'4". He has a really large wingspan, and he's really good at pressing receivers to the sideline and squeezing them to the sideline to condense that throwing window for quarterbacks along the sideline. So that's something he does really well, and I think he's probably going to have to be a boundary corner, but he's going to have to play a really good mixture of some zone and man, just because when guys are able to run past him, he really struggles with catch-up speed and that makeup speed like you saw in the Georgia game.
Yeah, there was one, a couple of plays, I forget which game it was from, but he actually looked pretty good in zone too, as kind of like a ball hawker with that length and the ability to disrupt the ball in the air. But I think that, you know, from a Patriots point of view, there's two corners that I kind of look at. Well, one's actually a safety, but I almost call him a corner, and it's Patrick Chung, who plays safety but actually defends the slot a whole lot for the Patriots. And that's kind of a role that I could see Jo'Juwan Williams fitting in New England, is covering tight ends a lot of the time in their scheme, and that might protect him a little bit against that long speed where he's going up against guys that aren't running 4.3s necessarily, and he can use his size and his physicality against tight ends. The other guy that I think that, you know, kind of projects nicely into a role that Williams could play for the Pats is Brandon Browner, who, when they had him here, they had Revis obviously on the other side, which is, you know, it's very similar to what the situation they have now with Gilmore, where you can put Revis or Gilmore on an island one-on-one and not need to roll the safety over that direction and just say, he's got this guy. And then you can put the safety over the top of Williams and let him press and have a guy over the top of him that's going to protect him against the long ball. The Patriots love to do that. They love to kind of either cone or bracket the number two or the number one receiver with their number two corner and a safety over the top. And they say to their stud, to Gilmore, you know, their all pro corner, you just go get the guy across from you. Whether it's, you know, the number one guy or the number two guy, depends on kind of the matchup. Although last year Gilmore was on such a hot streak that they would just put him on the number one guy and you know, kind of let him shut them down. But I think that the thing is that Belichick is seeing all these big bodied pass catchers kind of come through the league and really would like to add a guy into their secondary. The Patriots, other than Gilmore, who's a little bit on the taller side, really don't have a ton of height in the secondary right now. And you kind of organize it a little bit like a basketball lineup, where you have like a center and you have a point guard and you have a small forward, and you kind of need one of those guys that can be a little bit bigger. I could see Jo'Juwan Williams being that guy for them, and maybe they go in that direction with him either on the boundary, or they move him a little bit inside to like kind of a box safety role and have him cover tight ends. They also tried this same thing, and I think that they're still kind of trying to work on it with Obi Melifonwu right now, who they brought in last year, to kind of play that kind of role too. And Obi and Jo'Juwan are kind of the same size. So maybe that's kind of where their head is at. But, you know, I really like the player though. I think it's interesting where exactly the Patriots see him playing. And maybe they do see him kind of playing more of a safety role than a cornerback role. But the next guy I want to talk to you about for cornerbacks, and this is our last cornerback, then we're going to move over to the safeties, is David Long out of Michigan, who is not anything like Jo'Juwan Williams, but he plays the cornerback position. When I turned on the tape the first time when I watched him, he reminded me so much of Malcolm Butler that I just kind of thought that this has to be a perfect fit for the Patriots. And then he went to the combine and he ran like a 6.45 3 cone, which the Patriots love that three cone drill with the defensive backs. What did you see with David Long?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of him, and I'm really upset that I didn't get a chance to get to him in my guide. He's a guy I really looked at during the latter half, especially after the combine. That's really when he was on my radar.
Yeah.
But, I mean, a lot of people are saying that he's probably going to end up being a nickel corner, but I kind of disagree with that because he played on the outside at Michigan, too, and he held up really well. But I think that the thing that separates him is how well he's able to transition all four ways, whether that's east and west or north and south. And when he's able to plant that plant foot in the ground and drive back downhill, he likes to make contact as well. So that's something that Bill Belichick really values as well. His corners have to be able to tackle. And he's been adamant about that because he just doesn't like one-dimensional type of guys. Just because, I mean, these receivers are so good in the NFL now to where they can make one guy miss and take it the distance. So he's having guys like Stephon Gilmore and Devin McCourty and everybody else in the Patriots secondary to where these guys are consistent tacklers. And that's what you're getting with David Long, too. He has really good hips. He attacks the ball really well out of the air. And then you look up at the stat sheet, he hasn't given up a catch throughout 3 to 4 stretches of a game. So with David Long, you're getting a very consistent player. And I think he has that versatility to where he can play outside, or if you want to transition him inside to guard, whether that's tight ends or those short or shifty type of slot receivers, I think he can do either.
Jordan, one of the things I like about him, and Evan hit on this a little bit with comparing him to Butler, but just his sort of mentality. It's almost like he's a corner with a linebacker's mentality a little bit, with the way he comes up to the line and just really gets in a guy's grill. And, you know, I feel like, you know, how do you feel his, you know, sort of intangibles like that and how he plays the game helps him and is going to help him at the next level?
It's awesome. I think, and this is something I value in my grading of cornerbacks, I think you have to have that kind of, I don't want to say the word, that a-hole mentality to play that position.
You can swear on this podcast.
You have to have that alpha mentality, because I think of any position in the NFL, I think that's half the battle. As a cornerback, you have to have confidence at that position, because if you don't, you're going to get exposed really quickly. And we see these physically imposing receivers, if they get catches on you consistently, they're going to let you know about it. Whether that's Antonio Brown or Julio Jones, these guys are going to take your soul if you're out on the island with them. So every young cornerback that has come into the league and had success, they've had that type of mentality. And Marcus Peters is a great example. When he first came into the league, he has that alpha dog mentality to feel as if he's the best player on the field. Last year with, I forgot his name at the top of the draft, Denzel Ward, he had that type of mentality to where he came in and he just knew he was the best guy on the field when he was out there. So I think half the battle is these guys having that overflowing type of confidence. And David Long is a guy that does exuberate that.
Yeah, he's a really strappy man corner. And when you kind of are thinking about guys for the Patriots, I mean, I think the three boxes usually are, you got to be able to be consistent in press man and your press man technique, because they're going to play a ton of that. And you got to be able to tackle, which is the other thing that you mentioned, Jordan. And he checks both of those boxes pretty easily. I agree with you that I don't think that he's just a slot corner. I actually think that he's a perfect corner to play a lot of these guys, these receivers nowadays that move a ton around the formation. You know, a lot of these guys that are a little bit smaller, that aren't necessarily full-time perimeter guys, are moving all around the formation, all over the place, in kind of those Z receiver roles where they're off the line of scrimmage and they're coming in motion and they're motioning in and out and doing all that kind of stuff. Guys like Antonio Brown or Stephon Diggs or whoever you want to name, that's kind of the type of guy that I see Long being perfect to cover. You know, he can have that versatility where if the guy comes in motion, you don't need to worry about him going outside or going into the slot. He can just travel with that guy all around. I also think that he's a really nice kind of foil to what they have with Stephon Gilmore, where he still has a lot of the same traits that the Patriots look for in cornerbacks, but maybe he's got a little bit more speed, a little bit more kind of the athleticism to play inside or out. With Gilmore, they really want to keep him out on the perimeter and let him do his thing, whereas with Long, you can kind of move him around the formation and make a good number two. I think that a lot of people, I actually mocked David Long to the Patriots in my second mock draft, and everyone's like, a corner in the third round? Like, why are we doing this? You know, the Patriots are pretty loaded at that position. But I really think that he's the type of guy that just checks so many of their boxes that other really than their height requirement, which they've sacrificed a lot in the past with, and they really have kind of thrown that threshold a little bit out the door, especially outside of the first round. So we'll see what happens. But those two guys for the cornerback position with Jojuwan Williams and David Long, if the Patriots are going to go in that direction, that's certainly two places to start and look for Patriots fans. But let's move over to the bigger need, and that is the safety position, where I think this class is really cool because there's just a lot of different types of safeties, and it's kind of just like, pick your, you know, you have your choice of, do you want a box, more physical box safety type, strong safety type? Do you want the center fielder? What kind of guy do you want? The guy that I want to start with is Chauncey Gardner-Johnson out of Florida, who I feel like this year, really even coming into the pre-draft process, has like skyrocketed up boards into the first round conversation. Whereas in 2017, if you had said he was a first round pick, you were kind of, you know, a contrarian out on your own.
Yeah, and he's a guy that really is what I like to call a jack of all trades. And yeah, he played a lot of positions, but they really played him as in that big nickel role where he was that fifth defensive back on the field, primarily in the slot. And he caused terror there. And I think that was the biggest difference between 2017 and 2018 for him. And he needed to improve his tackling. He was just a really poor tackler in 2017. But 2018, he looked like a completely different type of player. And that's a lot of credit to Dan Mullen and his staff. They did a really good job of developing talent his first year there. And Chauncey Gardner-Johnson was a prime example of that. I love the physicality that he brought to the table. And you see it on throws on the perimeter. He's just absolutely blowing them up. And I think that's where most of his value comes from. He's probably going to have to be a slot defender for the most part. But that's typically fine because the nickel corner position is essentially a starter in the NFL now, just because of how light these NFL personnel packages are now, especially in the open field. So Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, it would surprise me if he goes to the Patriots at 32 or even at the top of the second round. I think that highly of him.
Yeah, I think he's really good too. One of the best plays I saw out of any of these safeties was his first interception against Michigan, where he just has such great spatial awareness in that entire game. And it makes you feel like, you know, this isn't just a guy who's good at covering or anything like that. This is a guy that can really, you know where the ball is going to be, you know, sort of when things sort of change on him. He just had a really good field sense, I thought, and he made plays on the ball. I think he had two interceptions that game, including a pick six. I mean, he's just a playmaker too. I mean, I think he's a pretty complete guy.
Yeah. His ability to play, I think, both on the back end a little bit and play down and as a slot defender, that kind of versatility. I mean, I know PFF like basically lists him as a corner, not even a safety. They're calling him a corner because of how much he was playing in the slot last year. That kind of versatility is something the Patriots always like. I mean, I think that he's about roughly the same size and has a lot of the same testing numbers as Patrick Chung, but I actually kind of look at him more as like a Devin McCourty, as a guy that can play in both a deep safety role and in a slot role or down as a cornerback, obviously Devin being a converted cornerback. So that, I think, is a nice little versatile fit for them and maybe somebody that could really early on make an impact, but you know, long-term kind of replace some pretty big shoes with either Chung or McCourty, whichever one it ends up being. That's obviously a spot that the Patriots, you know, are going to have to look towards the future, both of those guys on the wrong side of 30, but it's also a spot that two team captains fill right now. So it's kind of a big workload and a big part of the playbook that they're going to have to learn. So it takes a lot to do that. And I think that Gardner Johnson, I think Florida kids also, they just drafted Duke Dawson out of Florida last year. And Adam, remember when they said that a big part of the reason why is because he played in this great secondary down in Florida. So I wouldn't be too surprised if, you know, they dip in the Florida well once again and pick out CJ. I just think that he's the type of guy that really fits them. And obviously they seem to like some of those defensive backs down at Florida too. And I'm sure Duke Dawson would be on board with it as well. The next guy that I wanted to talk about was Taylor Rapp out of Washington, who, Jordan, his pro day did not go too well. And I think a lot of people are kind of cooling on him a little bit because the reports out of his pro day were that he was running in the low 4.7s in the 40, which is pretty scary for a safety.
Yeah, and I think he's one of those guys you really have to trust the tape with, because whenever you turn the tape on, he is absolutely everywhere. And Oregon was by far my favorite game of his because you're getting to see his versatility. Now, he's not a guy that's going to play on the roof of the defense. The closer he is to the ball, the better. And I think he's kind of a hybrid linebacker slash rover safety. I think that's the best fit for him. And he's going to play that strong safety role. I think he can hold up consistently to guard tight ends out of the slot or even in line in man coverage. But guarding those short or shifty wide receivers in the slot, I think that's going to be a lot to ask of him. But if you're blitzing him off the edge, you're using him in the box, he's a consistent tackler. I know Pro Football Focus only had him down as missing two tackle attempts all of last year, which is incredible, especially for a guy playing in the box as much as he does. But the closer he is to the box, the better. And I don't think he's going to go in the first round just because of how slow he ran at his pro day. But somebody's going to get a steal in the second round. I think he's going to get it. He's going to be a 10 plus year starter. And Eric Weddle has been the common comparison for him. And I think that's spot on.
Yeah. The one thing I think you hit it on the head in terms of that combo hybrid look. He just looks that role. I mean, just physically, he's a big dude in his pads. And, you know, Evan and I were talking about this. He just never seems to be out of position.
Yeah.
You know, he seems to know where the ball is going before it gets there. And that can, you know, like we've been saying, is that can make up for, a step short in the 40. But like you said, I mean, I'd rather have him cover a tight end than a quick slot receiver who runs a 4-4 or something like that can really be exposed. But again, like, I just really like the kid's his football IQ, his ability to tackle. I mean, if he's a good open field tackler. And he never gives up on a play. I just like, his overall game. But like you said, I think you really do have to trust the tape on this one.
Yeah, I'm sticking with the tape on Rapp because I think that his instincts and feel for the game are so key to him being kind of one step ahead. Honestly, sometimes when you watch him, you think he might have been in the huddle or like knows the snap count or something like that, because he just keys on the blocking schemes for the running game, especially. Like, he's like basically mirroring the running back like he is the running back, and he just kind of finds those holes and finds those lanes that he's going to run through. There's that one, I think it's against Oregon, the one sack that he had where he like perfectly times the snap count, and he's basically at a full sprint by the time he hits the line of scrimmage, and they snap the ball at the perfect time and he gets the quarterback. Those types of plays are all over his tape. I think that he's the perfect kind of player for Bill Belichick, because Belichick is so good at only coaching to a player's strengths and kind of masking a lot of the weaknesses that a guy has. So he's not going to go ahead and ask Taylor Rapp to play center field and play, as like a post safety in the middle of the field, because he knows that that's not exactly what's going to be his best usage. And I think at Washington, they did that a ton because they're such a zone heavy scheme there on defense, where he's like 20, 30 yards off the line of scrimmage. And you're like, what's this guy doing in Mars? Like, there's nothing good that's going to come out of that from him. He's not that type of athlete. He's not that type of impact player on the back end. You move him up front, up closer, put him over the middle in some underneath zones, have him match up against tight ends in the passing game. I think he's going to be a really good pro doing all of those things. I think you're really going to like the type of guy that he is too, just from a character standpoint, like in the locker room and talking to him at the combine. He's just a very smart kid and a very, put together kid. So that's definitely things that, you look for, especially when you get a chance to talk to these guys. All right. The next guy though is a complete total opposite, I think, of Taylor Rapp, and that's Nasir Adderley out of Delaware. Obviously a smaller school guy, but this guy can flat out fly, Jordan.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of Adderley. I got a chance to see him down at the Senior Bowl, and I thought he was a bit underwhelming there, but it made sense when it came out that he had an ankle injury, and I thought he just didn't look like as fast as what I saw on film. But I love that you saw the leadership qualities that he had, and this is something that the Raiders coaching staff really glorified him about, is he's getting guys in position, and his high football IQ was just showing off even in practices. And then on the film, you see that exactly. Now, they played him more in a one-high safety role at Delaware, and I think he could play that, but he's another guy that's really a jack-of-all-trades. He played outside corner, he played nickel, he played strong safety, and he played free safety. So I think a team like the Patriots really could target him, because they are a team that really likes to interchange or rock and roll their safeties a lot in certain positions. So Adderley could be that guy. Now, I think he needs to work on his tackling angles a little bit. He's a bit inconsistent with that, but he's not a coward or anything like that coming up in run support. I just think he needs to work on his cutoff angles, because he does get outran sometimes because he tries to undercut plays a bit too much. But as far as the way he's able to change directions and how good he is in pass coverage, I think he'll be just fine in those areas.
Well, tell me a little bit. I think, one of the things I've noticed in a few of in a few of his games, and a few other people have pointed this out too, is it seems like sometimes quarterbacks can manipulate him and sort of send him the wrong way and get him a step off with their eyes. But he seems like also the type of guy who's athletic enough to sort of make up for it. So do you see that as being a legit concern at the next level, or is that just sort of nitpicking with him?
Yeah, so there's one play against Richmond, and I'm going to make sure I send you guys this whenever we get off here. It's really amazing. So the quarterback tried to manipulate him one way, and he ends up changing directions and gets an interception all the way back across the field. So with him, he's a guy that what I like to call does take the cheese a lot, and quarterbacks are able to manipulate him one way with their eyes. And he is a bit aggressive as far as his pass coverage, and that's something that he does need to work on, as opposed to taking directional or diagonal drops. He probably needs to drop back vertical, especially when he is at that deep safety spot, and not being so aggressive, because he tries to be a hero a lot of times. He likes to play hero ball, and he feels that everything has to be a turnover or a game-changing type of momentum play. And so that's something that he does need to tone down a little bit, just being a bit more disciplined. But I think with a demanding position coach, I think that would be an easy fix.
Yeah, demanding position coaches kind of fit hand in hand with the Patriots, yeah. That's for sure.
and don't you kind of feel like you'd rather have that attitude than the opposite?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, I'd rather have that than a kind of a safe guy that's just trying to keep stuff in front of him. But I think, you know, just finally, just to wrap up on Adderley, the one other thing that you got to mention is the special teams value with New England. Yeah. You know, he's a four down player. This is a guy that I think he returned some kicks, some punts. Mm-hmm. And he also covered some kicks and punts. So you have a guy that can really play four downs. And I think that when you start talking about options, especially at 32, or if they do a Bill Belichick special and they end up trading down, when that happens, you know, Belichick at the top of the draft, a lot of these guys he wants to get are either at premier positions, you know, like last year he picked a left tackle, for example, or it's guys that have four down versatility. He doesn't want to necessarily pick a ton of guys early on in the draft that are only going to be on the field for a couple of downs. You know, that's not really his MO. So I think that Adderley, his ability to play on special teams is really going to be something that Bill Belichick loves. There's that one play where he misses the tackle on a punt, but he ends up running, you know, 50 yards back down the field to make the tackle. You know, that kind of stuff like that, that you see on the tape, the high effort plays, the ability to cover that ground. Belichick's going to see this guy and say, okay, you know he can play on defense for us in a couple of different roles, and he can also play on special teams. That's, you know, a lot of value in one player. And I think that that's, you know, something that the Patriots take a lot of pride in. I mean, look at Devin McCourty and Patrick Chung, but even McCourty especially, they both still play on special teams. You know, at their age, and you know, they're standing on the team as team captains. Devin McCourty is on the kick coverage unit as a last line of defense because he's so fast, and also because Belichick really trusts him back there. So that's a spot that a safety especially is probably going to fill for New England, and something that I think Belichick's going to really look for. Adderley was certainly a guy that I think, you know, with that versatility and his ability to play center field in a single high look is certainly something that I think screams Patriots, and we should all be talking about him. All right, let's last guy here. I think that it kind of has a first round ability or first round grade potentially is Jonathan Abram from Mississippi State, who is I like to describe him as just an alpha dog. Like, this guy is bringing the hard hat. He's always going to hit people. He's always going to come downhill at you.
Yeah, and that's things that NFL teams are going to salivate over, and he's a tone setter. That's what I like to call him.
Yeah.
And he was on – I've been listening to him for the past few weeks. He's been on some big-time podcasts, and everybody asked him who was the leader of the team's defense, and he quickly says myself.
Yeah.
He quickly says myself. I love stuff like that. Yeah. So he sees himself as a leader, and I wish he wasn't injured at the Senior Bowl, because I think he probably was going to injure some other guys down there. And, I mean, we're talking about a guy that got kicked out of his own spring game. That's how
I remember that. Yeah.
That's how much of a tone setter he is. That. And he's a guy that just plays with his hair on fire. And that's what I love about him. Now, I think he's going to be a bit limited as far as the roles that he can play. And he's another guy that can probably play that strong safety rover or in that big nickel type of package. I think that's probably what he's limited to. He's not a guy that's going to play on the roof or anything like that, just because he doesn't have the flexibility and the hip mobility to do that. But I just love the attitude and the swagger that he brings, and the presence that he brings to the table.
Yeah, one of the things I loved watching his film, when they brought him in on any sort of blitz, whether he even got to the quarterback or slammed into the, you know, the offensive lineman or running back trying to block him, and just the violent nature he plays, you know, yeah, down in the box. I mean, he's just tremendous. I mean, and it also brings us back to that thing where you're saying that, you know, if Mississippi State's defense could combine with the Ole Miss offense, you know, what kind of team would you have, you know, with all the receivers on the field with Ole Miss? It's just crazy stuff. But I mean, you know, like you said, I mean, I think, you know, this is a guy that could cover tight ends, and he's a little bit similar to some of the other guys we've talked about in that respect. You don't want him in the slot covering, you know, like a shifty wide receiver. But I do think he is a good enough athlete to not be totally exposed on other parts of the field. And you want to have that type of tackler on your defense. Every team needs one who's just that much of an intimidator. And I think, you know, he's just going to be a very successful NFL player barring injury.
Yeah, I agree with everything that you guys said. Jordan, my one question for you about him was, I hear a lot of Cam Chancellor comparisons for Jonathan Abram, and I kind of see it too, but I was curious if that is something that you see in his game as well. Obviously, Chancellor was quite the hitter in his, you know, heyday as well.
Yeah, I think they're very similar players. Now, he's not quite as big or as imposing as Cam Chancellor was, and I don't think he's as flexible as Cam was coming out. But you talk about the type of presence that they bring to the table and the similar type of positional value that they bring to the table. I think they're very similar, and I think that's why a lot of teams are really high on him.
Yeah, I agree with that too. And if you have a team, you know, whether it's the Patriots, or I know there are a lot of mocks, they're mocking him to Indianapolis at the end of the first round now, that have a guy that can play center field already on the roster to pair Abram with that kind of guy, I think the thought is to pair him with Malik Hooker in Indianapolis, and you have quite the safety duo there. I think that the Patriots could be interested in any one of those four safeties at the end of the first round. But Adam, how confident are you feeling about the Bruins or Celtics right now in the first round of the playoffs?
I'm feeling confident about the Celtics. I can't feel confident about almost any hockey playoff series because it's always so unpredictable. I mean, just look what happened to the Lightning. But I think the Celtics would smoke, or they're going to just waltz through this Pacers series like we were talking about earlier. I don't think. But after that, I'm not sure.
Well, I think if you're that confident in the first round, though, then you're probably willing to place a wager on them winning game three in Indiana tomorrow night. Now we're filming this on Thursday. You want to place a wager on them? Go to betonline.ag, the place to get it all. Grab the odds. Allow the experts at betonline.ag to do the heavy lifting. Sports betting, live betting, virtual casino, you name it. BetOnline.ag is CLNS Media's preferred sports book online. If you're feeling lucky, you like to support this podcast, because I know you love this podcast as well, go to CLNSmedia.com/Pats22 and use the promo code CLNS50 for 50% off a sign-up bonus. That's CLNS50 at BetOnline.ag, your online sports bet experts. And go Celtics and go Bruins. We're a Patriots podcast, but we care about everybody. Nobody is putting any bets on the Red Sox right now to do anything the way that they're playing. But let's get back to the safeties and back to the NFL draft prospects here. And I think the next tier of guys, Jordan, are kind of in the second, day two range, let's call it, second or third round. But I want to start with Juan Thornhill out of Virginia, who is kind of just that ball hawker on the back end, who has some great ball skills and really great range as well.
Yeah, I love him. I'm a huge fan of Juan Thornhill. He's actually my top-ranked safety. So we got a little bit of a difference there as far as where I see him. And I say that because there's a limited supply of his type, but there's a huge demand for them. And you don't see a lot of one-high safeties. And I like to compare it to just a vulture just sitting on a tree branch. And that's how he was over the Cavaliers defense. And he was just overseeing everything. And he was the traffic patroller when he was there. And he played a lot of different positions. Now, his ball production was outstanding. I mean, over 40 pass deflections, 13 career interceptions. The list goes on and on with that, with the type of production that he had. So that shows that he's around the ball all the time. And that's something that I really love about Juan Thornhill. And I think he's going to be a terrific pro as long as he is able to end up in a scheme where he can play that one high type of position.
Yeah. The thing I liked about watching his film is that UVA moved him around a fair amount. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it seemed like they used him really well. And at the end of every play, he was near the ball, even if he was on the opposite side of the field. And the other thing that I really liked about him is that, you know, we talk about play recognition and, you know, football IQ and stuff like that. He is high-level football IQ, I think, in terms of, you know, where he, you know, saw plays were going, sort of masking where he was going to go, even though he knew where the play was going to be. I thought, you know, just he strikes me as a guy that just sits in the film room all day and just studies the other team's strengths and weaknesses. And I think, you know, that's you know, any team would be happy to have a guy like that.
Yeah, he also put together quite the combine workout, if I remember correctly. I think he was the number one safety in spark score at the combine, testing pretty much great across the board and everything. And the 40, he ran really well too. I think, you know, he's another guy that was a converted cornerback or has played some cornerback in his career as well. And that kind of, you know, carries over to his safety role as well. And, you know, you look at these types of guys, like you said, and these kind of vultures on the back end that can play in that single high look, you know, that's perfect for a team like the Patriots that play so much post safety looks, that I think that really he's a very nice fit for him. Good, versatile player. I'm sure with his athleticism, they could stick him on special teams too early on in his career, and he'd carve out a role and be pretty good at that as well. The ball production, I can already see if they draft this guy, Bill Belichick or Nick Caserio, standing up there at the presser and saying that it's because of all the interceptions that he put on tape. They love that kind of college production type stuff with the corners especially, or safeties, you know, any defensive backs. So I think that he's a really interesting player for them as well. And he's kind of like, he's definitely a back-end guy, I think, that, you know, like you said, you know, it's a little bit rare nowadays. I think that when we're going through a lot of these safeties, we're going to hear a lot of, this guy's going to play in the box, he's going to cover tight ends, he's going to play close to the line of scrimmage. Thornhill's one of the few guys, maybe along with Adderley, that can really play on the back end with a regular, with regularity, which I think is, you know, going to be really good for the team that scoops him up. I'm glad that we disagreed on somebody, though, that you have him as your number one corner. I think I have him as our number one safety. I think I have him at 5. And the guy that I wanted to bring up next is at 4. So we're kind of right in that range. And that is Darnell Savage out of Maryland, who I said to Adam, his last name kind of says it all, because he really is a savage. I mean, that guy is flying all over the field like his pants are on fire most of the time.
Yeah, and this is actually one of my draft crushes from this year. And you turn on the film, and if we're sitting down and watching a Maryland game together, coming out of that game, you would be asking who number 4 is.
Yeah.
And that's exactly how you notice, and I don't want to say an elite player, but a player that is standing out in his position. And that's what you notice about Darnell Savage. Now, he is a bit frail. I think he's going to need to add some weight onto his frame, especially to hold up for the physical demandings of his position. But as far as, I like to call him a 5-tool player, and I know that's a common thing used in baseball, but I think he can play any position on the back end. And specifically for the Patriots, once again, they like to interchange their safeties a lot, and I think Darnell Savage could be a man that is a jack of all trades. And what I love about him is when he sees what's going on with the offense, he immediately triggers to it. And he is very consistent with tackling the ball carrier. And that's something that I value high with safeties. And it's the biggest trait that I love about Darnell Savage. His closing speed is so good.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the number one thing that I came away with too is, and the other thing, he's another guy that I love watching blitz, because he comes in so hot, man. He's like a missile coming in. And, you know, I think his Ohio State film was kind of interesting too, because, you know, he really made a great break on the ball coming off his man to sort of tip. He either tipped it for an interception or intercepted the ball himself. I forget which.
He tipped it to his teammate.
Yeah, exactly. That was, such a great instinctive play. And I also think that, you know, maybe – you know, he can get a little bit too aggressive at times, but again, like, that's what you kind of would rather have. And I think, you know, he's got the athleticism to back it up. And he's also a pretty smart guy in terms of, like, you know, recognizing things and like you said, just immediately, you know, stepping into it. I think he's got a lot of potential. I mean, it's, you know, he is a fun guy to watch.
Yeah, there was that play against Ohio State. I was going to bring it up too. I think they were running like some sort of all curls, like spacing concept. And there was like two guys that Dwayne Haskins could throw it to. And Savage kind of just like froze in between the two of them. And then as soon as Haskins made his decision, he just broke on the ball. And it was like shot out of a cannon. I like to call it click and close. And you have that click and close from him both in the run game too as well, where you might see him like on the other side of the field. And there's one play I remember watching him where it was a reverse and he's on the other side of the field, but he sees the reverse kind of, you know, developing.
Oh,
and he,
yeah.
shoots out of his spot and runs across the field and goes and tackles the guy behind the line of scrimmage on the reverse. Those are the type of plays that you watch, and this guy is just like all effort all the time. And I think that a lot of us kind of film geeks that watch a lot of this stuff this time of year, we all just love Darnell Savage because it's hard not to. But I think I agree. With some of the things that Jordan said about his frame and his size isn't exactly like what you would want, but he plays so much bigger than he is physically that, as long as he can kind of bulk up a little bit to, be durable and stay healthy, stay on the field, he's going to be a playmaker. He's a playmaker. He's not like, a guy that's going to just kind of stop the bleeding or anything like that. He's going to go out there and he's going to create turnovers and create havoc. And that's the type of guy that any coach, I think, would really like to have. The next guy, though, is, I would say, a little bit safer than Darnell Savage. Not quite the playmaker, but is a very instinctive player in his own right, and that's Imani Hooker out of Iowa, who both me and Adam Jordan were like kind of shocked at how well he tested at the combine based off the film. He tested, I think, a lot better than a lot of people were expecting.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. And he's another guy that was the leader on the back end of their defense. Yeah. Now, they experimented with him kind of playing some too high, and I think that's probably where he's most comfortable. But he also can play around the line of scrimmage too. But they did play him a little bit in one high, and I just don't think that's his best fit just because he's not a guy that's going to have that sideline to sideline range. But as long as he's able to keep everything in front of him, I think that's probably does him the best justice. And he's a really good tackler for the most part, even though his angles are very inconsistent from time to time. But when he's able to click close, like you alluded to earlier, I love that term. When he's able to click close and identify where the ball is going, I think he's able to bring ball carriers down consistently. So he's another guy that can play some too high in the cover two defense, but also I think he's probably best served as another guy that can play in that big nickel role at the closer he is to the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, I think I like that a lot. I mean, one of the things I like about him is just his build. He seems like somebody who can muscle guys even at the NFL level. I mean, you saw in the Iowa State film where there was a play where he was matched up one-on-one against Hakeem Butler in the slot, and Butler had nowhere to go, and Butler's obviously sort of a freak athletically, especially in the upper body. He's just a big athletic receiver, and and Hooker just locked him up and forced an incompletion. So, those are the types of guys you'd rather have him cover if he's going to be matched up one-on-one. Again, he's not one of these guys that's going to go step for step with one of these smaller, quicker guys. But you stick him on a tight end or something like that, I think he's, I think he's capable of doing that. And again, like, he's a very, very good tackler.
Yeah, he's got great instincts too. There's that one interception I think, all of us have probably seen at this point where he kind of is roaming in the middle of the field, and I'm pretty sure the structure of the play breaks down and Hooker kind of just reads the quarterback and has that kind of instincts, and when that kind of thing happens, like schoolyard almost, where you kind of everyone's just kind of running to space, and he has that ability to adapt to that and find it. I really was impressed though, at the combine running that three cone. I think he ran like a 6.83 cone. It was not what I expected based off of watching the film. That bodes well as well. He fits, I think, perfectly in the Patrick Chung role in the Patriots defense. Put him in the slot, put him in that box safety every once in a while too, and really kind of keep him out of the back end unless you're going to play him in like a split safety look, but they don't even do that a ton with Chung even. So I think that type of role is perfect for him. I think from a Patriots perspective, the only thing that I mentioned to you, Adam, is that they did draft Duke Dawson last year. And I do kind of see their roles in the NFL being a little bit similar, although right. I think that Duke is a little bit more of a slot corner than he is, a box safety. But I think the Patriots have that kind of in mind for him as well as kind of the Patrick Chung successor stuff. They might already have that guy in place, and maybe Hooker gets overlooked for that role. All right, we're almost wrapping up here, but the last two guys we wanted to ask you about, Jordan, are kind of sleepers, I would say, towards the end of the draft or the middle rounds. But the first one, I think, will probably come off the board before the second one, and that is Ugo Amadi from Oregon, who I think is probably one of the best man coverage safeties in this draft.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. And another guy similar to Juan Thornhill that has really good pass production or ball production, I should say. I think he has nearly 30 pass deflections, 9 career interceptions, and he also has 4 touchdowns with that. So he has really good production, and I was really impressed with how he moved around at the combine. Yeah. And I know his 40 wasn't great. I think he ran in the low 4.5s, I want to say. But the positional drills, I thought he really shined, and it really showed how good his hips were. I think he has really quick feet. And Oregon mixed up some zone and man concepts, but I thought he looked a bit more comfortable in zone because that's where his instincts really could take over. So he's another guy that's probably going to have to be protected by the scheme, and fit is going to be huge for him. But I think he could go maybe in like the 4th or the 5th round. I think that's a fair range for him, but he could prove to be a steal.
Yeah, that's another guy where I was actually not even – you know, watching his film per se, I was watching just the Oregon games, and, you know, it was just like, this guy keeps making plays.
Yeah.
You know, he's always around the ball, and he, like, great ball skills. I mean, you know, he, not just making interceptions, but, you know, turning them into big returns, making plays in the return game, you know, just a heady player who can sort of do a little bit of everything. I mean, he's not the first guy you want coming off the bus in terms of size or anything like that. He's not the biggest guy, but in terms of production, you really can't argue with what he did at Oregon from a production standpoint. And sometimes those guys don't translate, but I think he can, because he just, you know, it just seems like he always knows where the ball is going to be. And he's got just a great head on his shoulders.
Yeah, the combine work is definitely what put him on my radar, Jordan. And I think it was the speed turn drill.
Yeah,
he looked like exceptional. His hips just like don't even move. Like, it was incredible. Like, it was like he had like, you know, like a full 360 rotation of his hips or something like that. And he's like going right down the line without any wasted movement or any kind of side to side movement at all. That was like the first thing that I saw. I was like, all right, this guy can really move in a football sense. Like, we can run the 40, we can run the 3-cone, but how do you move in terms of like a back pedal from a deep look or in man coverage or whatever you might be in? And he is the type of guy, I think, that checked all those boxes at the combine, even if he didn't wow scouts necessarily in the actual testing portion of the combine. And then you watch the tape, and he's just a really good man coverage safety, a guy I think that could probably cover slots and cover tight ends and really be very good in that role. And I think that he's also kind of, you know, got a little bit of a tone setting mentality as well, and can bring it a little bit in the run game too. The Patriots are not going to draft anybody that they feel can't tackle. Like, if you can't tackle at defensive back, you're not going to be a New England Patriots pick. Although me and Adam kind of had some things to say about Duke Dawson last year that weren't so kind about his tackling. But for the most part, that's a kind of a rule of thumb. And I think Hugo passes all of those tests. All right, the last guy here, we promise, is Saquon Hampton. And we can't have a safeties podcast and not have at least one Rutgers safety on the list. So obviously Hampton is a Rutgers safety. So is Daron Harmon. So is Devin McCourty. Now the Patriots have Jason McCourty. They did have Greg Schiano in the building, but that only lasted about 2 weeks or whatever it ended up being. But the point of the matter is Hampton another 4-down player who tested, I think, at his pro day a lot better than some scouts were expecting. And he's kind of climbing up some boards here late in the process.
Yeah, and he was a bit of a late bloomer just because he missed some time with a shoulder injury in 2016 and 2017. So he's playing a bit of catch up during the process. And a lot of people, I mean, let's just be honest, Rutgers doesn't have a lot of talent there. But Saquon Hampton really did stick out during this last season. And what I love about him is he's another guy that he's not as quite the tone setter as a Jonathan Abram or anything like that, but as long as he's able to keep everything in front of him, I think he does a really good job of tackling. And something that I really do love about him is that he's always looking to make turnovers. And that's something that is just instilled within him. He's looking to jar the ball loose and get it out as much as he can. He has that special teams value, especially a guy that's probably going to be a late round pick. I think that's something that's going to help him, especially on his resume, when he's trying to make that 53-man roster. And then you couple that with some versatility, whether that's in the slot or as that spin down strong safety, I like to say, I think he can play in that role. So I think he's another guy that could go probably in the early to mid day 3. I think that's a fair range for him. And he's another guy that can prove to have some value.
Yeah, I like him. He's not one of these guys where you look at and you say, okay, he's like a tremendous athlete in terms of, you know, his speed and all that stuff. But, you know, I mean, he like you said, I mean, he's a very good tackler. And, you know, sometimes I prefer, you know, give a little bit more credence to somebody who doesn't have a lot of talent around him and still is able to, you know, make plays and keep teams off the board because, you know, they've just got more responsibility on their shoulders. You know, like, you know, it's sort of contrary to how, you know, the Patriots were talking about Dawson. Yeah, I almost don't want to see him surrounded by a lot of great players because it almost seems like it's almost a little bit easier for that person if he's surrounded by great talent. But as an aside, but that's one thing. But I do like Hampton in terms of his ball skills and everything like that. The passes I did see completed on him were ones where he did have really good coverage. I very rarely saw him get, you know, totally fooled in that a position. So in that respect, I think he's got a lot of good things going for him.
Yeah, so three boxes, team captain, special teams ace, versatile safety. That's a good tackler that went to Rutgers. My only hope is that Bill Belichick doesn't take him in the second round because those are like literally all of Bill Belichick's favorite boxes from a, you know, preferred school of his as well. And I know that, you know, kind of the Rutgers thing really is a Schiano thing, right? Belichick had a relationship with Greg Schiano. So a lot of Greg Schiano's players, Logan Ryan, Daron Harmon, Devin McCourty, ended up on the Patriots. So the Rutgers connection, I think, is a little bit overblown at this point now that Schiano has since moved on. But you still have a little bit of a connection there. And you'd certainly, I mean, this is a guy in Hampton who was a career special teamer. Like from his day one at Rutgers, he was playing on kick and punt coverage teams. So that's going to start right off the bat. And we talk about if they don't, you know, kill me and draft him in the second round and you actually draft him where he belongs on day three. When you talk about rosterability, like you said, Jordan, making the 53-man roster, at this point in the draft, you kind of have to have another way to make the team, right? Like you have to have, especially in a loaded secondary like New England, where they have some already kind of proven guys that are going to be on the roster no matter what. You got to find a way to get yourself on. Last year, Adam, Keon Crossan like basically made the team because of his special teams value. I don't know if he really does make the team otherwise. So I think that that's, you know, a big thing with Hampton as well. And if they don't go safety early on, then he's the type of guy I see that he could really step in and really kind of be that third safety that Daron Harmon has been over the last, you know, half a decade here, also a Rutgers guy. So we'll see what happens with those guys. But Jordan, thank you so much for staying on with us for almost an hour here. We obviously talked about your draft guide early on in the show, but if there's anything you want to plug from that or anything else on your Twitter or Cover One, now's the time.
Well, thank you guys for having me on. And I mean, it's always a blessing to come on here and chat ball with you guys. I wish we could do it for another hour just because I love
Hey,
debating
me and
football.
Adam can go all night if you want to. Be careful.
Especially with the Super Bowl champs. I mean, you guys are kind of spoiled with winning. I'm a Vikings fan, so I'm not used to winning nearly as
Well, at
much
least
as
you're
you
not a
guys.
Bills fan like the other Cover One guys.
Right. But I just want to talk a little bit about my draft guide. You
Yeah.
can go get it on CoverOne.net. Also, you can find it at the top of my Twitter pages, the pinned tweet, and that's at JREID NFL, J Reid NFL. So just make sure you go check that out. It is $10, but the great thing about it is that it all goes to charity. It goes to a foundation called the Raleigh Rise Against Hunger Foundation, which is just a charity that fights to end hunger, not only here in the U.S., but they also have international offices as well in Uruguay, Hungary, and the Philippines, just to give some examples of where they have international offices at. So you're donating to a great cause, but you're also helping yourself by getting to learn the background stories and also the on-the-field stories of these players. So make sure to go check that out if you get a chance.
Yeah, that's an awesome cause, and that's really cool of you. I didn't know that. I think that the cool thing about your draft guide too is that, you know, you can kind of read up on a lot of these guys in terms of like their strengths and weaknesses, but you have some background information on some of these guys, you know, like kind of just their personal lives and stuff like that, that I had no idea about a lot of these guys. And I think that that's the side of it for fans or for media on the outside looking in that we don't know enough about is like, who are these people? right? Like, who really right. are they? And I think that that's kind of like the third dimension of drafting. Like, we can turn on the tape, we can watch the combine and you know, kind of go about it with that. But that third dimension of what they do in the interview rooms, what they do off the field, who they are as people, is something that the teams are digging, you know, deeply into, but we don't always get to. So that's something that I think is really sets Jordan's draft guide apart. Adam, is there anything you want to...
Yeah, on Saturday, I'll be at the UMass spring game, nice. And it'll be very interesting to see exactly what the team has looked like and if there's any new guys stepping in. It's Walt Bell's first year, and he's doing like a very different offense, very up-tempo. It's a lot of, Mike Leach type stuff he's going to be doing there. So I want to see that in action. I've already been to a few practices, and it's very up-tempo. It's interesting to watch. So, yeah, I'll have a report on that.
Yeah, sounds pretty different from what they were doing last year, just based off of watching Isabella tape over the last couple of weeks. But for me, the Patriots big board, my top 50 big board for the Pats is almost complete. We're taping this on Thursday night, a week before the draft, and tomorrow on Friday will be the top 10 will be revealed, so then I'll have the whole 50 up. But you can check 11 through 50 is already up, so go check that out on clnsmedia.com. And also, I have a piece on Andy Isabella. Actually, I got to speak to him on the phone a couple of days ago for about 15-20 minutes, just about all things drafts. I'm kind of running a profile, so to speak, on Andy, obviously a UMass guy, so we got that ties, and also a potential Patriots target. So cross your fingers that he gets drafted, because then I already have this piece to pump out. But I think that there's some really cool things about him working out with Randy Moss, obviously an interest Patriots fans. Talked to him a lot also about the comparisons that he gets to some of the other slot receivers of the past that maybe don't really fit exactly his style of play. He mentioned Golden Tate as kind of the guy that he's modeled his game after, who plays the game certainly, I think, a little bit differently than a guy like a Julian Edelman or a Wes Welker or something like that. So be sure to check that out. That'll be out next week. And then a quick one more. CLNS will be at Gillette Stadium a week from today, and also all of draft weekend covering the draft from Foxborough. So we'll be there in person to do that. Hopefully Bill Belichick doesn't trade out of the first round. Otherwise, we're going to be sitting there for 4 hours doing nothing. But other than that, that's all I got. Jordan, thanks once again for coming on, man. That draft guide is really awesome. I've been really enjoying picking it apart and looking at the different things that you got to say about these guys. I like that we disagree on some guys. That's always good, too. But until next time, signing off for Adam Kirchen. For Jordan Reed, once again, I am Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.